Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. Behind the show for actors who are heard but not seen, and we've got Liam O'Brien on the show this week. Good morning, yeah. Liam. It's morning when in LA right now.
Yeah, it is. Where on the planet Earth are you right now?
We're in Minneapolis, so it's right about noon here.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Yep, it is early here. I've just deposited one of my children at preschool, and am now hiding in my closet at home. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for hiding in your closet. Mm-hmm. We've got a bunch of questions to ask you. We've got some listener questions, but we'd like to start at the beginning. Now, you grew up in New Jersey.
That is correct.
How did you make the transition from New Jerseyite to swinging L.A. voice actor?
Well, I ask myself that sometimes because I was never going to come out here ever. So I grew up in New Jersey, first stop out of the Lincoln Tunnel. And could see the city from my house and spend a lot of time there, too. And then in high school, realized that maybe this was a thing that I could do. Not voice acting, but acting. And applied to acting schools around the country and decided on NYU. And that led to living in New York. And I plunked around doing theater for a while. And eventually an opportunity for dubbing an anime called Boogie Pop Phantom about 15 years ago popped up, and I fiddled around with the smaller amount of VO in dubbing there was in New York for a couple of years, and then my wife and I decided to try the West Coast, as happens with many an actor, and we came out here, and I thought, maybe I'll get an on-camera career going, or maybe not. Maybe this voiceover thing will work, and the voiceover thing did in fact work, so here I am 15 years later.
Is New York not, like, New York is kind of the center of a lot of media creation. Is it not so much the case? I know it used to be a bigger VO town. Is it not so much anymore?
It still is, but even within VO, there's many little camps and tribes and different kinds of work. New York is mostly commercial, which I do a little bit. I have a couple of good campaigns going, but now, all these years into it. But as far as animation goes and gaming goes, there's only a small amount that's done there. People typically come to Los Angeles for their voiceover for anything animated or there's definitely exceptions, but someone with no credit or experience in voiceover in New York trying to get, the T-Mobile career was kind of hard in the beginning. And my strengths, it seemed, and still are, I guess, were in animation and games, which is, I think, just like an extension of my theater background, really.
Mm-hmm. So you said your first role as a VO is doing dubbing for Boogie Pop Phantom.
Yeah.
And that actually leads into our first listener question. They wanted to know, what was it like that first time?
I remember it very well. It was, this was on the East Coast, but it was just outside of New York City. I recorded at a place called Headline Sound, and I had to take a train about 45 minutes north into the state of New York to get to this studio. And it was in an old, I think like steel mill town or something. It was the great old red brick buildings from 100 years ago. And someone had built, a guy I know still named Joe had built a studio in there. And I was nervous as hell. I wanted to prove that I could do it right or do it well, which is something, young actors. I think a common thing with young actors is, I got to show them what I got. I got to prove that I'm serious. And so I was very quiet and serious. Years later, I've learned that everyone wants fart jokes in between the takes. So I relaxed into it a bit. But I worked with two people, and I actually did a little blurb in Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt's book, Voiceover Voice Actor, about this, but that first day in there, I was working on the role, and I was lucky because normally, and I've learned this as a director, when you're starting off somebody new, especially someone who's never done voiceover, you give them just bits because you don't know if they're going to be, how quick they're going to be, what their sort of skill level will be. And I was lucky in my first job. They actually gave me a sizable role in one episode of something. And in if anyone is familiar with watching a lot of anime, will know sometimes you'll see a character get a monologue or a huge chunk of text, and the mouth will keep flapping for what seems like a minute and a half with no breathing, pauses to breathe or anything. And you run into that dubbing sometimes. And the best you can do is take a huge belly full of air before you deliver the line, and then just talk and talk and try to keep talking. And if you have to take a catch breath, you try to hide it as best you can and make those little breaks as small as possible. And I got to my first ever in my career huge chunk of text, and I thought, okay, I don't know how I'm going to do. This seems a little nerve-wracking, and I just took in a big belly full of air. And I made it all the way to the end and thought, oh, boy. All right, I hope that was okay. Let me think, what will I do on my second take? And while I was formulating this, the producer from the company I was working for ran at the glass with a yellow post-it note that for some reason had the letters FB on it, and he slapped it on the glass as hard as he could, and I just scattered backwards. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if I'd angered him. I didn't know if I was getting fired. I didn't know what was going on. I was just staring at this man with the devil in his eye and the letters FB pressed against the glass, and there was a beat, and then he just looked at me and said, "Fucking brilliant!" Which has never happened again. I don't know what I thought I was going to find after that in the future, but no one has ever quite as manic on the other side of the glass since then.
Do you think because you tell that story, and now that it's in print in the book, do you think that puts pressure on other producers or other directors to either completely underplay that or try to find something even better to do to you?
To be crazier?
Yes.
No, I don't know how many producers have read that book. I know a lot of actors have. Anything to keep us on our toes, I guess.
That works. So, you know, since then you've done quite a bit of anime, and I give you credit because you're the first actor I've noticed, and this might not be the case, but you're the first actor I've noticed that has your own TV tropes page.
Am I the only? I've seen that page, but I'm the only one with it.
Well, you're the first one I've seen. I haven't really dug into it too much.
Okay.
But I'll give you some credit on that at the very least. And one thing they mention is that you seem to be very good at playing characters with, quote, more than a few screws loose in their head.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's how I got in. I think, you know, earlier in my career, I played a lot of crazy people and fops and cowards. I don't know. It's sort of morphed over the years. Not that I don't ever play parts like that anymore. But maybe with all the yelling I've done over the past 10 years, my voice is maybe a tad deeper. Midway through my career, I started getting cast as large characters. I don't know how that happened because I still think of myself as a skinny little dipstick from high school. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I was always a bit of an outsider in school growing up and never considered myself, you know, I wasn't one of the popular kids. I wasn't on the football team. And so I just had to latch on to what I could do, which was be a spaz. I also, eventually I'm going to destroy the world. So it's just all practice.
But yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's always important to practice any skill, really.
Good night, planet Earth. I'll most likely kill you in the morning.
The other thing that people have mentioned is that your villains, they also tend to be kind of British. Do you think there's something inherently evil in the British accent?
Well, anytime you've ever heard me in anything, there's director input. So I guess, there's true British, and then there's what's called standard American, which is oftentimes productions will ask you, they'll say, well, we don't want British. We do want very clean, very pronounced consonants. We want you to sound, have hard edges, as opposed to talking like you're from New Jersey where everything's kind of rounded off. So, I mean, there's very rarely have you ever heard me in a project where I came in and said, listen, I'm going to turn this guy into half a Brit, whether you like it or not. We are sort of like Play-Doh for directors and producers to mush about. By getting back to your question, I guess we've sort of been brought up on that. I mean, we had the Revolutionary War. We've got that in the back of our brains. If you watch Star Wars, which we've all been raised on, all the bad guys are English, except for Darth. So maybe that's just a trope that we've all learned. I don't know. That seemed kind of a roundabout answer to your question, but that's the best I got.
You mentioned that you're kind of putty for directors. doing, you've done several characters that, that have been long running characters of course, Gaara from Naruto and several others. How much influence do you have over a long running character over time? And do you find that it's, or do you find it's easier to kind of have influence over those little bit parts?
Well, Gaara specifically, that was one where, and oftentimes with dubbing anime, the producers say, they'll, 9 times out of 10, they'll say, we want to get something very much like the Japanese, because they want to honor the spirit of the Japanese production. Maybe 10% of the time they'll say, yeah, I mean, this is, was great for the Japanese version, but for the American audience, we think it doesn't quite communicate, so we'll do something very different. So with Gaara, I was aiming for close to the Japanese performance, and I thought the performance was great. But I've been with it for about 8 years now. I think the show is about to hit its own 10-year anniversary, and we've been working on it for almost 8. So I think it started one way, and then as Gaara grows up through the course of the 2 series, really, they are, although we think of it as one. And as he got older, I think I've made him a little more like myself. I mean, there's still definitely a similar quality to the way I started, but he's gone deeper, obviously, because he's gotten older, and I think I've made more of a difference between the younger Gaara and the older Gaara than was done in the Japanese. So, I mean, the longer you do a role, the more the producers who hear you every day, who make the decisions, they think, oh, well, of course that's it, because I've been hearing it for 5 years or 6 years. So I allow them to warm up to changes I brought into it.
Now, you also do a fair amount of producing and directing yourself, and that seems to be fairly common with voice actors. There tends to be a lot of voice actors that also do directing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
First off, in the grand kind of community of directors, be it anime or even video games as well, do you find that, like, what do you think the proportion of acting directors are there versus people that solely direct or solely direct?
It's pretty small, actually. I mean, I know, especially in anime dubbing, there are a lot, but in the projects I work on in general, especially in video games, there's not a lot of actors directing. When you've got a new property and you've got like a director, a whole entire game director who is not just worrying about the cutscenes, but is working on, like, well, let's take The Last of Us. I'll get specific. Neil Druckmann, who I think is largely responsible for why The Last of Us's voiceover in the cutscenes is so breathtakingly good. I mean, he obviously got wonderful actors. Both the two leads and the supporting cast are phenomenal actors. But those phenomenal actors work on tons of projects. And, you know, I've worked on projects where I come off sounding great, I think, and I've worked on projects that I won't name that I don't think I sound so hot on. It really depends on whose hands you're in. And Neil, who worked on The Last of Us, you know, he oversaw a ton of the game, not just the voiceover. So, and a lot of games are like that. You've got a guy who's a game developer who's got his mitts on every part of the game. So there's not any, I can't think of any actor who's in that position. It's more like an actor will get high if they're sort of splitting up the workload on a game. I guess we're talking games right now. You might have someone who says, yeah, well, I just work on what it looks like and the gameplay and all the assets, and then we hire a person who's great with voices. So when it's that kind of setup, a portion of the directors are actors. And that's really just because, I mean, you know, I've been working so long in voiceover, I understand the genres we work on. I understand what the developers are after often. And I just have a know-how with actors. And it's not to say that someone who's not an actor can't do a good job. I mean, Neil Druckmann certainly is a testament to that. But, you know, oftentimes the game devs are busy with other things. And it helps to have someone who spent 10 years acting and working with actors to come in and sort of help massage what they want out of the actors they've hired. And then definitely in dubbing, there's a ton of actors doing it. Because it's a very small community. The people who are good at it are fast and just sort of get it. And you know, if you're looking for a director and you got an actor who maybe isn't working at that moment, tapping them on the head and saying, hey, come over here is probably a pretty good idea.
Switching quickly back to anime, as a director or even as an actor, Do you have much contact, or do you make an effort to work with the original Japanese actors or the Japanese crew when you're doing anime?
No, that almost never happens. I guess I've heard of instances sort of like that. But usually it's recorded in Japan, much earlier than with us. And then it just, some company is in charge of taking all the assets over to America and getting it started. So it's not like we're even introduced to those actors or those directors. They're thinking of it like it's their project, and that's as far as it goes. And I don't know, they're gonna sell it out in the West too, and I guess the Americans will dub it over. But they're not, I don't think they're thinking too hard on it. They'll have a producer from the company sitting in often, and or at least listening to the a first pass of the recording and asking for pickup, something like that. But there's no sort of in tandem working with the sort of the production voice crew from the East. I missed a chance a couple of years ago. I went out to Japan to do voiceover for something. And I love Naruto. I love that I've been working on it for as long as I have. I read I'm pretty current with the manga. I mean, I sort of gorged on it a couple of years ago, and I probably have missed the last year's worth of stuff. But I really love the property. I love the characters. I love my character. I also love the hell out of Naruto. So it's near and dear to me. And when I knew I was going out to Japan, I talked to the people we know here and said, hey, I don't know if they'd be cool with this, but could we maybe get in touch with the crew in Japan? I would love nothing more than to sit like a quiet mouse in the room and watch them work on an episode. It would be hugely rewarding to me. And they were very into the idea. They said, oh, yes, anytime. But they had recorded an episode. I was only there for about 4 days. And one of the days I was there was a recording day for them normally, but not that day. They recorded the week before, they recorded the week after, and so I missed my window. And I am crossing my fingers that the show goes on long enough and that I get another trip back to Tokyo that I can sit in and watch. I'd love to see it.
Well, I'm sure someone over there is listening to this show, so we'll see if we can make it happen for you.
Hello.
Moving on to games, you've done a huge amount. And we're going to go to another listener question here. Winter wants to know, quote, what is it like voicing the most awesome villain in history? And that's a reference to Caius Ballard from Final Fantasy 13-2.
That was pretty confusing, actually. Because when we recorded the game, another thing that happens with Japanese video games sometimes, occasionally, they'll have the recording pretty close together. With what's going on in Japan in here. And that game is full of time travel and what dimension are we in? And it's not like we got all that. We didn't get all the materials all in a clump so that we could digest it from start to finish. We were getting pieces from the end, pieces from the beginning, pieces over here, pieces over there. And so I was getting handed chunks of scenes and was just, I had to trust the director who knew more than I did and follow his sagely advice, because the story was hard to see from the middle of it. But he was hip and velvety, and it's fun to inhabit that space. I wish I had long flowing purple hair and could convincingly wear feathers in my hair like that. That'd be cool.
Have you thought about cosplaying as any of these characters?
No, 1 year for Halloween, I did put on the love symbol on my head and gave myself some dark eyes, but I wore a military jacket and jeans. I was just out with my kids for Halloween, and I thought I'd do a little something for Gaara. But I've never felt the urge to go full-on Gonzo dresses Caius, nor do I have the time to build a David Bowie-esque purple leather outfit with a giant sword with feathers glued onto it. That's time-consuming, and the people who do it are amazing. And have time for that. I have two kids and work a lot, and time is at a shortage for me.
You could have the kids work on it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. I could pay them 20 cents an hour. It'd be awesome.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Okay. I think, I've seen pictures of you, and I think you could pull off war. I think you've got the chest for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to think about.
You know, I don't think I put this online anywhere, but when that game launched, Joe Matarera, who is the game director and an amazing comic book artist, invited me to sort of a launch party somewhere in California that I went to, and they had a mechanical bull there. It was a mechanical bull with War's horse, Ruin, put on top of it. And I wore, I think, like a jean jacket with a hoodie underneath it. So there is a photo of me that exists with the hoodie draped down dark over my eyes with me sitting on the horse. And it's pretty convincing.
Nice. I like it. There needs to be a skin for either the Darksiders games with just War wearing a jean jacket. I think that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. What were those games like? Now, that was one of your first real leading roles in a game.
Yeah, in a big Western game, that's probably true. I think you're right. And that was right in the heyday of, hey, this skinny little guy can sound like a linebacker. Let's run with it. Like Asura and Asura's Wrath, Caius. And now I work a lot on war games, too. It's very confusing to my psyche because when I first started in voiceover, it all made sense. I was playing like little skeevy leches or, as I said, cowardly characters, little guys. And I thought, well, this will be my corner because I'm not a leading man. I'm this little skinny character actor. And it's just slowly morphed over time. And I've tried to figure out how it started. I think I worked on an anime show somewhere where, and this was the first time ever, but they said, hey, Liam, and this often happens, we know we finished all your lines for your character and we've got this one other bit. He's kind of big. Do you think you can do that? It was just like a truck driver with six lines. But I did that. And I pitched my voice down. And they put, at this place where I was working, they put everything in a database and save it for later for when they're casting. And then the next time that company brought me in, it was for a main character with a deeper voice like that. And then that company only used me for deeper voices for a long time. And then other companies heard that, I think, and it just sort of became a snowball rolling downhill. No. I don't know. Maybe that's how it happened. I actually like playing the cowards and the fops. So if anyone wants to throw any of those at me, bring it on.
Do you worry about getting typecast? I mean, like you said, you kind of do these long runs as a certain kind of character. Do you worry that you're cutting yourself off or someone else is cutting you off?
You know, I can't even control it. First of all, any actor who's trying to get into the business, you should hope that they pigeonhole you. I mean, I luckily have a certain number of types that I get cast in frequently, but that's what you want as an actor. I mean, like, every actor in their acting school says, I can do anything, I can be anything, I'm Meryl Streep. That's kind of BS. You want to get to a point where, I mean, George Clooney is typecast. You know, he's not playing effeminate little... I don't know, con artists. He's playing leading men all the time. That's his type. You want people in the voiceover industry or the Hollywood industry to say, oh, Liam's good for this, he's good for this, he's good for this. We should audition him. And trying to, I mean, there's things you can do. Like, I work out now. I try to be a little, you know, slightly buffer than I used to be. I have a deeper voice now simply because I have yelled for 10 years. But ultimately, you can't control where your career as an actor are going to go. I often get asked, oh, why did you choose this role? I've never chosen a role. I get offered opportunities to audition for things and for projects. They'll give me six parts to try for, all different sounding, and I'll read for all of them, skinny guy, big guy, tough guy, funny guy, and they just give you the role that they think fits best. So it's like trying to control the current of a river, really. It's just you're going to get pushed where you get pushed.
If you had your choice, is there a particular character you'd like to play? I mean, you're a big comic guy.
Well, it's too late because they've already dubbed it twice, but one of my favorite movies of all time is Akira, or Akira, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And I would have loved... I came to L.A. about a year or 6 months after they redubbed that show, and I would have loved at least to audition for Tetsuo. The angry kid who turns into a pile of flesh goo. That's a favorite role of mine. I'm enjoying getting more into motion capture and doing stuff that feels like a melding of my voiceover career plus my theater background. I mean, for, I don't know, 10 years I did theater in New York City and around the country at the professional theaters around the company and here in Los Angeles. And since voiceover has sort of embraced me and sort of yacked its business all over me, and I have two kids, I'm busy and just sort of embracing what has been good to me. But I loved my time on the stage, and I look forward to returning to it if I can. In the meantime, the motion capture sort of feeds both kind of itches that I have.
Now you're on the internet. You've got your Twitter, which is Voice of O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also got a podcast as well.
Yeah, that's we're way behind currently. That's sort of just a labor of love for my bestie Sam Riegel and I. Sam Riegel is sort of like the brighter version of me. He's another actor, director, great director, much funnier than me.
Is he better looking than you?
No. We're right. I may be like 1 centimeter ahead of him under the right light, but then if you shut the lights out and feel his muscles, then it leans heavily in his favor. But the podcast is just about, you know, he and I have very similar career tracks. We act all the time. We direct projects. He's on Sophia the First, which is a gangbusters hit on Disney. And I you know, I do as much directing as I do in games. So we're constantly out of our gourds busy. And he's got a kid now and I have two. And so we weren't spending as much time together as we wanted. And we had sort of said jokingly a couple of times over the years, we should do a podcast. What the hell would we talk about? And we just made a podcast about what we're doing from week to week and how we never have any fun and forcing us to have fun. And hopefully you guys are laughing at our asinine musings on the VO industry as well.
Well, the podcast is called All Work, No Play.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, do you get a chance to go out to conventions? I know we got Comic-Con coming up here in a little bit. Are you going to be out for that?
Yeah, I'm going down to Comic-Con. That's something I do with my family every year because we like to visit to San Diego. And I don't go to as many conventions as many of my colleagues, and I chalk that up to wanting to see my kids on the weekend. I work a lot during the week and oftentimes just see them at breakfast and for school drop-offs, that kind of thing. So when we get to the weekend, I don't really want to take off too many times a year because they're only going to be young one time. I go a couple times a year. I'll go to... you know, someplace on the planet if they want to bring me and my family out. But I know I don't go as much as some people I work with. So I'm sorry if you guys are looking for me at the cons. I love going to them. I love seeing the costumes and getting feedback and sort of interfacing with the people I work with. Oh, my wife is coming into the closet right now to ask where her car keys are. So I'm going to jimmy them out of my pocket. I'm sure this is fascinating for the listeners. Here you go, honey. That's how it's done on a professional basis, guys. What was I talking about? Oh, cons. And I'm going to one in Florida called Mythicon later this summer. That's the only one I have on the books, I think.
Now, you'd think with voice acting especially, maybe not so much with directing, but since the technology has gotten to the point where you can do a lot of work from your home, you'd think that'd be a little more kid friendly, I guess, for lack of a better word. Is that not the case, or is it just
it is? I mean, when I am home, yeah, I can see my kids. If it's the latter half of the day, and both my kids are in school, so it's the latter half of the day, and I just have an audition or two. Yeah, I'll be home. I can see them. That's afforded me to be home more than, say, someone with who manages a hedge fund and is gone from 8 to 7 at night. But more and more, I'm out of the house all the time, so I'm lucky. See, oftentimes I'm too busy working to audition, which is an interesting problem to have. And I'm not home as much as I used to be. I also used to write a lot more. I used to adapt episodes of anime. I'd take the literal translation given to me. I can't speak Japanese fluently, but I'd take the literal translation, which oftentimes sounded like cookbook, and you know, make it sound like good flowing English dialogue. So I would be home for full days just adapting and having my kids, or my kid at that time, running around behind me. My son knew all about Gaara because he would see him on the computer screen quite a bit.
Do your kids enjoy the fact that you are the voice of cartoons?
Well, most of the stuff that I work on, they're not allowed to.
I would imagine, I suppose.
And I had to cherry pick what I would show him of Gaara. They do like my Wonderful Pistachios ads. They're allowed to see those. I will probably show them the episode of Sophia the First that I just did, where I played a nefarious magician. But that'll come in I think in the next couple of years. They know. I mean, I tell them about the jobs I have. My son knows that I'm playing Red Skull on the Avengers. He's seen a picture of him, but I don't want to confuse the boy and show him a character that sounds like his dad yelling like a growing dictator.
All right, two more final questions. The first one is pretty much just for me, but, you know, I'm sure at least one other person cares. As someone that has played War in the first two Darksiders, can you give any insight as to what's going on with that series?
No, we don't know anything. Actors don't know anything. Actors are the last people to be called. I hope they make it. I really do. I mean, I know what they talked about as possible ideas for the future. And I think that's out on the internet, but I'm not going to talk about it just in case I'm wrong. And, you know, I love the role. I love Joe Madureira's art so much. I was in love with his artwork when I was a teenager collecting comic books. So it was amazing to get to work on that, but I don't know anything. You know, we just, you get, the actor is literally the last person to hear about any news working on a game. The people inside the company know about it. They flesh their ideas out. Then they contact casting people. The casting people send out to the agents send to us. We get pieces of paper where the characters' names are codenamed. And if it's, you know, if we're working on like a Superman game, it's called Zorbot, or the Rutherford Project. You know, the stuff is always coded and hidden, and then once you finally get the job, then you learn what the heck you're working on. Most of the time, sometimes you don't even know what you're working on. Also, like, we live in the internet world, man, and actors leak a lot of stuff. It seems like once a month I see some dude so excited to be on X, Y, or Z that he takes to Twitter or puts it on his LinkedIn page or something. And then, you know, like a whole section of a specific game gets blown because an actor's like, well, I worked on a show. So, I mean, and that comes from in the film and TV world. If you get cast in a movie, you can put an IMDb that day, a year in advance. You can't talk about the story, but they'd say, oh, so-and-so has been signed on for the blah, blah, blah show. And it's up there, so they're used to that, and then they think, "Oh, well, I'm the new War, so I replaced Liam O'Brien. I'm going to go to IMDb and go bloop, 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 and put it up."
All right, okay, so I lied. This is now last two questions. Anything you want to pitch or pimp? As long as we're talking about leaks and things like that. Anything coming up that you want to talk about?
Pitch or pimp? Well,
either one.
If you're one of the last people to play The Last of Us, go play The Last of Us, which I got a little bit of my stink on. I did a lot of the Hunters and the Infected in that, but I also had the pleasure of directing all the Hunters and everyone that Troy Baker is going to shoot in the face. And I guess watch Avengers Assemble, which has just come back and started up full time this past weekend. Done by pistachio nuts.
By wonderful pistachios. The final question again, and I always feel kind of weird asking about this, but it was a listener question, so we're just going to blame her.
I wear boxer briefs is the answer.
No, Winter and Danny would both like you to say something in Caius's voice.
Wonderful pistachios, get cracking.
Those should not have been mixed.
Impressive.
There you go. That's what you got.
Very good. Well, thank you again, Liam O'Brien. You can find him on Twitter at Voice of O'Brien, and it's BRIEN.
That's what it is.
EN, not AN.
Not AN.
Not
that
AN.
Jerk, whoever that guy is.
Yeah. So check him out on Twitter. Check out his podcast, All Work No Play, whenever he gets around to doing another episode. And again, just keep an eye out for him, and keep your fingers crossed for Darksiders 3. That's just more for me. But
and me
and you. Well, thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you, and thanks everyone for listening to me squawk like an idiot for a decade. It has been my pleasure.
This has been The Voice Behind, a production of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode, and for outtakes from this and other episodes, as well as news and commentary from the voice actor community, follow our Twitter feed at twitter.com/thevoicebehind or on Facebook at facebook.com/thevoicebehind. Comments, questions, and suggestions are more than welcome at voice@fancypantsgangsters.com. Thanks so much for listening.